I just found the intro for the podcast.
Yep, this is going before the theme song.
This week on The Loot Drop, Jack asks the important questions.
Have you ever heard anyone say, "I'm from Las Vegas"?
Dale regales with tales from Dragon Age.
Making that decision at the end was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do in a game.
And have you ever wondered what really gets Stuart excited?
Oh my god, that staircase is amazing!
And welcome to episode 11 of the Loot Drop podcast. I am your host, Jack Yorston. Unfortunately, Martin and Sam are unable to join us this week, but we still have the pleasure of being joined by the future face of the independent music industry, Stuart Johnston.
Yo, what's up, yo, yo, yo!
And professional Ainsley Harriet impersonator, Dale Brownless.
You can't see it, but I'm doing the jazz hands.
Oh, you were going to say, like, ready, steady, cook or something.
Yeah, I was waiting for that.
Please. I haven't been on that show in years.
Oh, wow. He's up to date with Ainsley Harriet's goings-on. He really is professional.
So he's reading his autobiography as we speak.
Dream reading. I'm writing the damn thing.
What has Ainsley been up to these days?
A lot of olive oil. I can't go into much more than that.
He's up to his ears in olive oil.
Oh, yeah. It's glorious.
So, yeah, just the three of us this week, but we still have...
Just the three of us, we can make it if we try.
I think that's how it goes.
A round of applause from all one of our audience.
I thought you were starting a beat there.
I can if you want, but it won't be very good.
Hang on, I'll get my bass.
I have to live up to the name of future face of independent music.
Yeah, just do a Google image search for Stuart Johnston. And
also do one for Samuel Chen, Nick Eplin, Martin Shaw, Jack Yorston, and Dale Brownless.
Also Jack Yorkston.
And Jack Yorkston. Because you won't find any of us.
Shout out to Jack Yorkston on Facebook. Justin Bieber hairstyle.
But he listens to the podcast, he's like, oh my god, they know who I am.
At last, fame!
Then he goes home and gets beaten up by his wife.
Aww.
That's harsh.
What? It's Boxing Day for them. Every week they have like a day where they go home, put on the inflatable boxing gloves, and just punch each other.
Boxing Day was months ago, Dale.
Oh no, not
also,
this.
Also, that's not the type of boxing.
Shit. So I should tell my granddad that. Still gets those weird Vietnam flashbacks and flies out from under the table at you. He's like a really aggressive, adorable cat.
So we have things to talk about this week.
Do we?
Do we?
So... No, this is the Ainsley Harriet autobiographical podcast now.
Yep.
So, games we've been playing this week.
None. All of us were in a coma.
Wait, what are games?
How does game?
I think they are prepared in the kitchen.
Oh! In that case, I've been playing macaroni cheese.
So jelly.
Love that game.
Oh. Legend of Zelda, Link to the Pasta.
You're so terrible.
That tangent was worth it for that pun. Okay, so, on that note, Stuart, why don't you go first?
Well,
games you have been playing.
This week, I have been playing a little game called Hotline Miami.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, no one has. It's a very
hipster.
It's a very underground game. Nah, it's
you win your Hindi game. Hindi games.
Yes, Jack.
I wanted to say hipster and then change my mind mid word. So
Stuart and his who games.
So yeah, in Hotline Miami, you play as Ganesh. I don't know.
And you have to fight your way through various...
Insert name of Hindu festival that is not Ramadan, because Ramadan is Islamic and Jack is an idiot.
Yes.
Oh, no. We're going to Hindi hell.
We just lost all our Hindu viewer.
I'm pretty sure I just, like, offended everyone by implying that there's some version of Hindi hell. I'm going to stop talking now and let Stuart continue about Hotline Miami.
So it was nice to have Jack on the podcast while he was alive.
Yeah, it was. Poor guy. Anyway, Hotline Miami is, if you don't know, it's basically a top-down murder simulator. That's really the best way to describe it.
With the best music ever.
Yeah, the soundtrack is phenomenal. I did have it on Steam, but I didn't play it that much. But it's currently available for free if you have the PlayStation Plus
subscription.
And it's definitely...
PlayStation Plus.
Shut up. And it's definitely worth the pennies that you're not spending.
That game does not, like put you into the violence slowly.
No. It's like almost straight away you're...
So you want fuck tons of violence and blood? Done.
That game has no time for your bullshit.
Oh, I'm sorry, your grandmother's round? Here, have a shotgun.
Go nuts. Yeah, I don't know if like you felt the same way about it, Stu, but it took me a while to really like get into the mindset of playing that game, because there are very few like games like that where you run into a room and can be immediately gunned down.
I don't know, like, I pretty quickly got into the gist of it. I'm not good at it, don't get me wrong, but, like, I pretty much, I don't know, I just immediately enjoyed it, immediately just thought, yes, I know what to do, and then died 100 times while still knowing what to do.
Have any of you seen the videos I uploaded to YouTube of me playing that game?
A while ago, yeah. I recall you becoming agitated.
Yeah, the first few levels, I was like, this is amazing. And then later on, when the enemies start getting guns, I'm like, my last plan of literally running and hit everything doesn't quite work anymore.
Oddly enough, it's the enemies with guns that I find the easiest to deal with.
Really?
Yeah, because I just, like, slowly creep around a corner, shoot him, and then run away, and then lock onto the next guy, shoot him, and then run away.
The two best feelings in that game is kicking a door into someone and then, like, stomping them, or throwing a baseball bat at them from a mile away and then running over to them and pounding them off the ground.
But, I'm not that far into it. I think I'm only, like, chapter 7 or 8, and I shouldn't
even
be
that far. I'm only 7 or 8 chapters into this game.
Well, it's like, each level is a chapter, and the levels are pretty short.
Yeah, I think... On my videos, I got to, like, the second or third one, and I played it on my own for a bit after that, and I think I got to where about you are now.
But I shouldn't have gotten this far, because there was one level, and it's like, the doors are trapped, so if you go into them, it explodes. Yep. And I was like, I don't know how to get past this. And then, in the eighth attempt of that level, I just, like, started the level and almost immediately heard an explosion, and a guard had walked into the room and set off the trap.
Plot twist. And, if you play the level like 15 times, it doesn't matter how many times you open that door, you still die. They never forget to put the bomb back on the door. But I can't remember, I think I tricked the guard into coming out somehow, but I can't remember how. Or maybe I just got like you and got lucky with one of them, their path changed.
That's probably how you're supposed to do, like try and drag a guard out, but I don't know. I just heard the explosion. I was like, oh shit! And then was very, very careful not to die for the rest of the level.
Yep.
But yeah, Hotline Miami is definitely worth checking out, especially if you've got a PlayStation Plus subscription.
It's also on Steam, and
I think it's quite a few places at this point.
Yeah.
Is it on the Xbox, though?
Oh, actually, no, it's not.
No, I didn't think it was.
PS3 or Steam. But, if you don't have a PS3, it'll probably be in the summer sale on Steam, which should be in a few months' time, so...
Yep. Did you hear, you know how you were saying it's like a top-down murder simulator?
Yes.
Eurogamer described it as a top-down fuck-em-up.
That's an even better way to describe it, actually.
Yep, it's out on every PlayStation thing, like Vita 3, 4, it's on OS, Linux, and Windows.
Not on 4 yet, but the sequel will be.
Well, it says that Hotline Miami is. It's probably just one of the things that you can, like, download from the thing, though.
Well, I was going to say, you say Murder Simulator or Fuck 'em Up. I say it's like playing a really dark Hollywood action scene, but about the same pace.
Yeah, and as many Hawaiian shirts as well.
Yeah, it's got a very... Well,
also animal masks.
It's set in the 80s, so it's obviously got a very, like, 80s aesthetics, very neon, lots of neon. I like neon.
Yep. Shout out to Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon. That game literally took place in a neon light.
Its soundtrack is very, I think, very influenced by the film Drive, I think.
Yeah.
Like,
really heavy, like, techno.
Yeah, it's really, really good, though, the soundtrack.
I do like the soundtrack as well. The problem is there are only, like, three.
Only, like, three.
Three?
Yeah, I mean, they start, like, repeating after you get to about chapter 4.
You know, there's 21 different tracks, and then there's also another 2 bonus tracks.
Bullshit.
Tell me, it's true. And one of the songs is called Horse Steppin'. It's 10 minutes long. The actual soundtrack...
I wonder if my copy of the game's broken, then, because I keep hearing the same music, like...
Your one must be broke.
I think in the... at least... as far as I've gotten so far, there's a few like tracks repeating the levels. I think there's like certain tracks are only used for levels, certain tracks are only used for like interludes and
I think some of them are like situational as well. Like you could go through a level fully stealthed and never hear a certain song. But if you go in like blasting your gun around, then you're probably likely to hear it.
I also don't like using guns in Hotline Miami. Like I know I use it for other like gunners, but I much prefer hitting them with something.
They are, I will admit, the guns are quite temperamental.
I just throw the gun at them.
Yeah. But yeah, that is Hotline Miami. Check it out.
Yep. I'm really excited for the second one.
Yeah, me too.
What else you've been playing, Stu?
Well, since then, I've been separated from my PS3 because I came home for Easter. So I got really bored earlier today and plugged in my Xbox for the first time in 9 months.
Yay!
And was way too lazy to find a game to play, so I just decided, oh, I'll play some of the Xbox Live Arcade games that I've barely even touched. And,
Fruit Ninja Connect.
Yes. No, I don't even have a Kinect. But the problem is that...
I don't even have a controller.
I don't even have an Xbox 360, I'm just... imagining these things.
It's a cardboard box with the word Eggbox 360.
359. He couldn't afford the last egg.
Why'd you have to rub it in? Anyway, so I decided I'll play... first of all, I decided to play a little bit of Guitar Hero, you know, reminisce of my teenage years a little bit.
Guitar Hero retro at this point.
It's pretty retro. They don't even make the games anymore. Well, actually, it depends which one you were playing.
Like Rocksmith.
I wouldn't call it retro. Oh, it was 3 and Roll Tour. I just started playing.
Oh, well, they're kind of retro now. They're pretty fucking ancient.
Yeah, but I don't really consider anything on the 360 retro.
Not even Retro City Rampage?
No.
So, do you not see what I did there, though, Stu?
Yes, I did.
Are you proud of me,
clever.
Stu? Notice me, senpai. So, yeah.
But then... the reason I play the Guitar Hero games is because I couldn't find Rock Band 2, which I still think is the best rhythm game I've ever played.
Yep.
And then I remembered I had Rock Band Blitz on my Xbox, and I thought, oh, I'll give that a shot.
Very underrated game.
It is a very underrated game. I've definitely enjoyed the few minutes I played of it.
I had more fun with Rock Band Blitz than I did with Rock Band 3.
I've not played Rock Band 3, but...
It's a lot like Rock Band 2.
Yeah, well...
nothing like Rock Band 4.
There's nothing like
Rock
Band 4.
There was a Lego Rock Band game, right?
Yes.
Yeah, there was. It had the Ghostbusters theme on it.
Right, that's the game of the year.
Every year.
Also, Sam is still loading.
Yes, he is. I'm actually just staring at it because I'm on the itinerary. Anyway.
Yeah, it's kind of hypnotizing just watching that buffering bar.
I've never seen a picture have to buffer before.
For over 20 minutes.
Sam really doesn't want his pictures used, even when they're not him.
Anyway, Guitar Hero. Or Rock Band Blitz.
Rock Band Blitz, yeah. It's a good game, and you should play it.
What's your favorite song to play on there?
Well, I only played a few tracks.
She thinks my tractor's sexy.
I can't really make answer you, Jack, I'm afraid. I only played like a couple of Nine Inch Nails songs because they're my favorite band. Of course, I'm going to play them. Maps by Yeah Yeah Yeahs, Next to You by The Police, and then I moved on to another game. But yeah, it's fun. If you've got a lot of like, especially if you've downloaded a lot of tracks for the previous Rock Band games, it's definitely worth checking out, I think.
I want to say, if you manage to get more than 4 stars, this is to anyone, if you manage to get more than 4 stars on 5 Magics by Megadeth, fuck you.
And I'm going, I don't know what I'm going to do now.
You can try.
The other like game I played semi-extensively was Tony Hawk Pro Skater HD, which isn't very good.
Had me up until HD.
Not very good.
You had to say 3, 4, underground. No, HD.
Like, here's the thing, I'm so used to playing like all the games from like underground onwards, and it's not the same control scheme, so it's like, what the fuck is going on? Why is Rodney Mullen not doing what I want him to do? And then, no, it's just not very good. Which is a shame, because I really like the Tony Hawk games, but no.
Rodney Mullen is a strong, independent man.
you don't need no skateboard.
You don't need to revert or spine transfer.
I just dropped that skateboard noise and took a sip of whatever he's drinking. Like,
like, sir.
I know some fucking... I know my shit.
I know how to board.
You put your feet in the bits and you push...
Don't put your feet in my bits.
To do a kick flip, what you do is you take the board and you kick it so it flips.
And then in the last possible second, you jump in the air and then fall over and pretend you meant it.
Yes.
Strike a pose.
Okay, calm down, Madonna.
And then you shove it.
Boo.
I'm gonna go now. I don't have the same skateboard knowledge that Stuart does.
I don't have
so I just call him Stuart.
You did just call him Stuart.
It's new microphone, it's playing with my words.
Of course it is. So yeah, don't buy that, just play the classic Tony Hawk games.
Yeah. Project 8 was actually a really good game.
I really like Project 8. Like, I think that was the last one I really enjoyed. But I think a lot of people seem to think that after Underground, that's when it went downhill.
Yeah, the one thing I liked about Project 8 was
the whole, like... And it went even more downhill
like...
after Downhill Jam. Sorry, Dale. I had to say that.
Yeah.
I thought Proving Ground was alright. That was the...
Proving Ground never worked for me. Like, it would play for about 20 minutes and then crash every time. So I never got to experience it that well.
I was going to say, the thing I liked about Project 8 was the ladder climbing in that game. Like, I don't know, just like having that sort of... Not really just
would you have
climbing
preferred
the ladders.
Tony Hawk's Pro Ladder Climber?
No, like the...
Tony Hawk takes the ladders!
Like, trying to get into the top 8 felt like an achievement after a while, because like, it took forever to get to that point, and you had to go through progressively harder challenges and stuff. And when you get to the end and it's like, you have to challenge Tony Hawk at his own thing, I was like, my body is ready. And then I immediately turned off the game because I was like, my body is not ready.
So, are we all in agreement that Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 4 was the peak of the series?
No, I think Tony Hawk's Ride said no one.
So that's me.
I agree with Jack.
I never played 4.
Pretty awesome. You could play as Eddie from Iron Maiden.
Oh, yeah. Fuck. Why am I not playing it now?
I know, right? Stuart, fix yourself.
I will. And in the meantime, Dale, tell us what you've been playing.
Well, I'll leave one game to the end because I need Jack in it as well because we went through this experience together.
I'm looking forward to this.
But the free game on Xbox just now, Deadlight, I've downloaded that and I've started playing it. That game is actually really good. It's like, do either of you two know about the game?
Is this the, like, 2D zombie survival
kind of
thing?
Yeah, it's basically like...
They're kind of like Shadow Complex with zombies.
I was going to say kind of like Limbo with zombies. Because it's in the same sort of style, like your character is normally always like silhouetted. And it's not difficult per se, you just have to occasionally solve tricky puzzles. There's the, like, constant fear that you're going to be, like, followed by zombies and shit. And there's a lot of free running in it, and that's actually very, very good. So if you should, I mean, download it and then like even just give it a try, because it's free just now on Xbox for the rest of the month. And by the time this podcast's out, there'll probably be a few days left of it.
I remember, I want to go back to the free Xbox games thing, and yes. I remember playing the demo for Deadlight.
Yes.
I thought it was pretty good, but I started buying it, but I eventually decided, I think I was like kind of burnt out on zombies by that point, and
yeah.
It doesn't really do anything particularly.
It definitely came out in that like big zombie time for games.
About the Xbox thing, have you been keeping up with that? What have the offerings have been like?
They've been quite good. Like before Deadlight was Hitman Absolution, which is a really good game. So I think they're jumping between like full retail and arcade games quite a lot, which is nice.
That one or two a month?
Two a month.
There's only one available at
one at a time though, yeah. And like just now this month it was Hitman Absolution, then Deadlight. I'm actually trying to bring up a list of the older games that have been on there. There was Defense Grid, then Assassin's Creed 2, then Crackdown, Dead Rising 2, Halo 3 was one of them, Gears of War, Sleeping Dogs, Dead Island, Dungeon Defenders was last month, so was Civilization Revolution. And Germany actually got Metro 2033 in February because they couldn't get Dead Island. And per South Africa, in September, instead of getting Rainbow Six Vegas, they got Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts. They got the epitome of bad games.
What problem has South Africa got with Rainbow Six? I don't remember Rainbow Six Vegas going to South Africa at any point.
Nope. I'm surprised that,
well, don't you know Las Vegas is in South Africa?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I thought South Africa was in Las Vegas.
Both.
Okay, right. Hang on. Whoa. Since we brought up Las Vegas, really weird tangent I want to go on, but I was at home this weekend and I discussed this with my family. Have you, like, out of people you know and people you've seen, have you ever heard anyone say, "I'm from Las Vegas"?
No.
Like, have you known anybody who lives
there? No one's ever lived there, I don't think.
I just started thinking about it.
I've heard of other people.
People actually live in Las Vegas, or is it like 100% casinos, hotels?
I've heard of people come from other parts of Nevada, but never Las Vegas.
Yeah.
That's weird. I never thought about that until now.
But anyway, on you go, Dale.
So, off of Deadlight, which really the only other thing I'll say about it is that like the platforming sections in it are really well done, and it's like not, it doesn't make itself too difficult. In a sense, you just have to sort of like pay attention to your surroundings. But today I bought Need for Speed Rivals and I played that for an hour or so. It's actually not that bad. I prefer playing as a cop.
Or a Nerd for Spood Rivets for those of us viewing the itinerary.
Yeah, Nerd for Spood Rivets. I think this is definitely a game that's best played with your friends, because one of you can be a racer and the other can be a cop, and you just spend the entire time trying to nail each other, metaphorically, not physically, because there's no nails in the game. But I played it online for a little bit. And
what is a metaphorical nail?
You know, kind of like that thing that they put Jesus on the cross with.
I'm pretty sure that was literal nailing.
Nah, that was just metaphorical. They were like, dude, we're going to like put you on the cross, but we can't actually affix you there, because, you know, it'd be cruel to stick things into
you. We're getting into potentially blasphemous stuff again. We should go back to Nerd for Spood.
Quick, back to the Hindus.
Hindi gaming.
But one thing I like about the Need for Speed game is the fact that at any point you can go back to your house, or if you're a policeman, you get like these command centers, and you can switch over to the other side, so you can be a racer or a policeman anytime you want. And the police get three versions of every car. You get like the normal car, you get an undercover version, which is like faster, more easily controlled, but less durable, and enforcers, which are slightly slower, more resistant to damage, and take folk down quicker. And racers just, they buy new cars whenever they've got enough for it. So, like, whatever path you take, you end up with a lot of fun to be had. I'm preferring playing as a cop just now because I find it easier to... This is going to sound like it's impressive, but I find it easier to take other racers down than evade them. The only reason being, when I'm a racer, I generally tend to crash into everything anyway, so being a policeman just gives me the excuse of crashing into everything to look like I'm doing it well.
You're a student of the burnout school of play by the sound of
it. Oh man, fucking... What
crash into everything for optimum results.
What was the burnout game that came out for the 360? Was it Paradise?
Paradise!
That game was like the epitome
Actually, Revenge
of my...
came out for the 360 as well.
Well, no, I meant Paradise. That was like the epitome of my driving career in games, because that whole game was crash into this. And,
Yep.
But yeah, I'm going to play a lot more of Need for Speed, and one of my friends who I used to play Most Wanted with a lot has also bought it, so I think we're just going to have, like, this is going to be our bro game, and it's just like everything we play will be this from now on.
I assume you're playing this on the 360, yeah?
Yeah, this is on the 360. I don't have a one yet, and I couldn't be bothered forking out for it. And
I saw that it was going to be on sale for the PS4, but you mentioning that it's best enjoyed with friends. I have no friends on PS4.
It is an online always game, I'm pretty sure. But it's worth picking up anyway, because I think it's just more fun that way for me. Maybe it's not for other people. But, like, it's always online, and there's human drivers and there's computer drivers that you can interact with. So you don't always have to, like, chase down a computer or escape a human policeman. You can, like, if you crash into an NPC policeman, he'll still try and take you down. The only problem is you may then get, like, another human player also come after you, and it makes your job a whole lot harder or easier, depending on what team you're on. But the tutorial makes you play as both anyway, offline, so you get a feeling of what it's like to be both, and it lets you pick there and then which one you want to jump into the game with. So that was pretty cool. A lot of people have been complaining about it, but I don't have any complaints about it. I've always really liked racing games, and I've not got any problem with this one.
I think, like, with friends, racing games are one of my favorite games to play.
Yep. In Most Wanted, me and my friend Yen, we made up our own game mode, because there's an abandoned airfield in that game, and one player goes in the Range Rover, and the other one can go in any car they want, and the rule is, neither of you are allowed to, like, let go of the right trigger, which is your accelerator, unless you're, like, braking to turn, and you're not allowed to leave the airport, and basically the Land Rover has to wreck the other car, and then you swap over. That's some of the most intense gaming I've ever had in my life. But, should I move on to my last game? Which is probably the most intense out of all of them.
Well, I think that could probably be its own topic after the break, if I'm honest.
Yeah, it probably should be, actually, because there's going to be a lot of it for me to talk about. So, Jack, what have you been playing?
Okay, so the only game that I've been playing this week, really, is a game called Jamestown. Which those of you who invest in the Humble Bundles might be familiar with. Have either of you guys heard of it?
Wait, do you mean Jamestown or the Humble Bundle?
Jamestown.
Then no.
No. It's a game that it's an indie game that came out about 3 years ago now, I think. Uh-huh. And it is a shoot 'em up.
I like it anyway. I think already even.
The cool thing about it is that it takes place in this, like, alternate universe where you're on Mars, but the world is, like, kind of steampunk, like, New World era kind of thing. I, like, looked it up on Wikipedia just beforehand, just so I wouldn't be, like, talking out of my ass history-wise. And, because, God forbid, I don't want to make that mistake on a gaming podcast. And it describes it as, the game takes place on Mars in an alternate history, history steampunk 17th century, where the planet is a British colony contested by the Spanish and the indigenous Martians.
No one expects the Spanish Inquisition.
They do not. So you encounter, like, historical figures like John Smith, and I think you play as Walter Raleigh.
Yes.
The game itself is pretty fun, even if it doesn't do anything. Probably the coolest thing about it is that you can play with up to four players on PC. You can, like, one person can use a mouse, one person can use a keyboard, and then someone else can use a controller. And yeah, you basically just go through. It's not a very long game. This game was actually introduced to me by my girlfriend, who played through five levels in about the space of an hour while we were waiting for takeaway. So it's not a very long game. Wow. Thank you, Dale. Highly appropriate.
Dude, what can I say? I love takeaway.
You can also play as four different types of ships, which all have like their own unique attacks. And also, the music is great. The game is like in a 16-bit style. It looks very much like, yes, I would say Final Fantasy VI. Music just like fits it perfectly. It's like, it sounds, maybe like chiptune is the wrong word, but it sounds like an orchestra being played through like a SNES.
Nice.
So, not much to say about it beyond that. Like I say, it's a really short game, but it's fun just to play like an afternoon's worth, I suppose, if that's as much as you can. I think there is like a bit of replay value to it.
Sounds fun. I might look it up.
I've got it, so...
You got it already, Stu?
I got it in like a Humble Bundle many, many moons ago. Never actually looked at it, so... You've convinced me, Jack. I'll have a look at it at some point.
Right. Like I said, that's literally all I've been playing this week.
Yeah!
So, Macho Man Randy Savage is back. With a gorilla.
Please cut my Randy Savage impression. That was awful.
Nope.
If I had to leave mine in last week, yours is staying in too.
Make it louder and make it a solo track. Three times. Put dubstep behind it. I swear to God, if you do that, that'll be the best podcast we've ever recorded. 5 minutes of intense Stu's Randy thing dubstep. What?
My Randy thing. Holy.
5 minutes of Stu being Randy.
I think that's his contribution to the podcast already, isn't it? Just
minutes at a time of him being Randy.
Yep.
There's many videos of that, Dale.
Yes.
You just need to know where to look. Wink.
Pornhub.com.
Wink.com.
Alright.
Porn.
So,
ugh.
Dale does have one more game to talk about, but it deserves its own segment.
Yeah.
So we shall take our first break.
Yeah.
Dale, do you want to talk about this game that has given you much food for thought?
Oh, man. So, I finished this game a long time ago. I can actually check when I finished it, but I'll get back to that. So, I started looking through my old games list, thinking, what would be good to replay that, like, wouldn't be, like, same-ish? So, I found Dragon Age Origins, and I was like, fuck it, you can play that game 1,001 ways, might as well try it again and try it with like a new character type. So, I originally beat the game with a warrior class, and instead I was like, right, I'll make a mage then, what could possibly go wrong with that? So, unbeknownst to me, this game, I say unbeknownst to me, I'd forgotten, this game throws morality choices at you when you least expect it, but if, like me, you become like really... not engrossed, but what's the word? Like, when you get really into something?
Immersed?
Invested.
Oh, I just forget my word.
Inversed-mid. I put both our words together.
When you get inversed, were you playing the game upside down?
Yes. I was hanging from the ceiling. Lionel Richie was there too.
I love playing Dragon Age as a bat.
Oh. I went dancing on the ceiling, but okay. We can take your joke, Jack.
Well, I missed that joke.
Funny too. But, I think when I last beat the game, well, when I last played the game, was when I beat it, and that was in, what's the 7th month of the year? July. I was going to say June, but it's July.
It sounded so, like... What is the 7th month of the year?
So, the last time I played the game...
Why did you remember it as the 7th month of the year and not as July?
Because I looked up the achievement and it says 24/7. I was like, what's the 7th month? Like, I remember the word for it. Last time I
Dragon
played
Age
this game...
Seven,
so, Dale, what did you do on your summer holiday? Well, it was great. In the 7th month of the year, I went to Magaluf.
No, it's like, when you get an achievement, it tells you the date. It doesn't say 24th of June, it says 24/07. And I couldn't remember what month that was. But no, anyway, the last time I played the game was June 2012. So it'd been nearly 2 years since I played it. And I was going through it, and your character has a friend called Jowen. And he's like, you immediately recognize him as the character you're supposed to connect with at the start of the game. Like, he's your friend. He's a bit nervous because he's not doing well. And they have these things called tranquil mages, who basically have all their emotion drained out of them, taken away. And they basically, like, almost caretake in this place. You're in a thing called the Circle, which is a giant tower where all the mages go, and it's guarded by Templars, so they can't get out, and they're there to practice magic for as much as they want. So Jowen is worried that he's going to become a tranquil. They're going to take away his feelings and stuff, because he's not a very good mage. So he's like, I don't want to lose my feelings. I'm in love with a priestess woman who is not supposed to be with a man.
As opposed to those priestess men.
Yes. So basically, like, his situation is, he loves her, she loves him, she's not meant to be with a man, he doesn't want to lose his feelings. Also, he wants to be a mage. So they come to you and they're like, we need your help escaping from the tower. And you're like,
yes, we're going to make this your problem now.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's like, I don't mean to bother you after, like, your character goes through a thing called the harrowing, I think. If I remember right, that's what it's called. Where basically you go into this place called the Fade, which is where demons live. And you're meant to solve a test, which is find the demon and beat it. So you do that, and you uncover the secrets, and you beat the demon, and it's all good and well. Then you escape, and this thing fucks with your mind, because you're literally like, you've put your consciousness in there, and if you lose, a demon will take over your body and possess you and mutilate your body into this weird demon thing, and then you get killed by Templars. So you survive that, and you come back out, you're like,
oh. I'm gonna lie, I'm having starting to have trouble following this.
Right, I'll get off that like path in a second. Basically, you come out of this like horrifying mental test to be age now. Congrats, go relax. Only for Jaron to be like, I've got a problem. You're part of it now. So basically, they want to escape the Circle, which is the building you're in, but no one escapes from there. So you go about and you decide whether or not you want to help them. This is where the morality choice comes in, because you find out Jowen may be doing illegal blood magic, which is heavily frowned upon, but he might not. No one has proof. So it comes to the point where you can either agree to help them or go and tell, like, the head of the mages what they're up to. And this is when I brought Jack into it. I was like, I can't make this decision because I don't know if he's really doing it or not. So, like, do you betray your friend and do your duty as, like, a mage? Or do you help him and potentially, like, fuck up all three of your lives? Because if you get caught, all three of you go down for it. But in the end, I had to turn around and I was like, I went to the head mage. I was like, they're planning on escaping. And instead of turning around and being like, you did good, he did bad, he turns it around on the priestess and is like, she's leading him astray. We're going to tell the Templars and make them out to be the bad guys. So then, shit keeps hitting the fan. You agree to help them. And just as they're about to escape, you get a chance to tell them what you did. Or continue along with the plan, like you don't know there's Templars waiting. And I just had a mental breakdown. I was like, I have to tell him what I did. So in the end, Jowen ends up hating me and storming off with his girlfriend. Only for the Templars to catch them. And then Jowen to use this intense blood magic to wipe out everyone except me, the head mage, his girlfriend, and this guy whose name I can't remember because he's not that cool. And he escapes. So then my conundrum was, well, shit, Jowen's out in the free world where I'm going to be eventually. And everything you do in that game has like a way of coming back to you in the end. And I'm like, I've just unleashed a blood mage who hates me into the free world. I don't see how this can go wrong for me at all. So,
Assuming this is like all part of the like origin story that
this
pretty
is
much
the,
like defines the plot of the game. For
well,
you.
This is the origin. Like every race, like you got
every class. Has
yeah,
an
every
origin,
race
right?
Has a set amount of classes, and then they have their own origin. So dwarfs can have like a dwarf warrior who's a commoner or a noble, and that's two different starts. You get a commoner start or a noble start. Mages are singular, you only get mages, and there's things like rogues as well. And if you pick a human rogue, you get the human rogue start. Elf rogue is a different one. So there's like 12 different ways to start the story. And if you choose the mage's one, it's a pretty set path, but people will then treat you differently in different places, because other places are more or less friendly towards mages or elves or something like that. But then, on top of those decisions, you've got your morality choices that you've made. So, for all I know, I could go somewhere where people hate mages, find Jowen, and end up getting him hating me too, and then have literally an entire town of people hate me. Or I could end up in a town that really likes me, but doesn't like him, and he tries to kill us. Like, I have no idea what's going to happen, but he's going to come back eventually, as they always do. But that game, like, I'm thinking like 2 hours into the game on my mage. In fact, no, I think I'm even further than that. I think I'm like 12 hours into my mage. I can't remember. I've played it too much. But, like, the intro to the game is the same for everyone eventually. You go to this place where you're part of an army, and the whole thing is that you and this guy called Alistair, who ends up being your, like, teammate throughout the entire game, are separated from the rest of the army to make sure that you can set off, like, a beacon so that this other army knows when to come in and attack. Special flanking maneuver. So unheard of in war. But the guy who you send the thing off to tell him to charge, tells his army to retreat and fucks off because he's actually secretly evil the entire time. So he blames your people for what happened, so if you tell people you're a Grey Warden, you have a 50% chance of them being like, you killed the king, we hate you, or we know you didn't really do it, we'll help you. So on top of me having to hide the fact that I'm a mage, and hide the fact that I'm a Grey Warden, I also have to hide the fact that, like, any other decisions I've made, like, I went
just, like, hear you talk about how crazy broad this game is. Really, like, makes me miss the fact that I used to have, like, less games to play, and I would go back and replay old games in, like, different ways.
Yeah.
This seems like the kind of, this seems like the kind of game that you could get, like, I'm not even joking, like, 1,000 hours out of.
You definitely could. Like, there's different classes and races have different, like, persuasion and intimidation levels. So, like, classes will be less good at persuading people to do things, but you can force them to do it. But I made the mistake of, like, there's a guy who I know you can have in your party, and you have to get this woman called the Revered Mother, who's, like, a really important religious figure in a town, and you have to try and get her to give you the key to his cage so he can go free. And no matter what way I cut it with her, you know, I was a Grey Warden, I was recruiting him into an army, I needed him, she was like, nope, not giving you the key. Until I was left with two options, leave without him, or threaten to kill her. And I was like, I need him. He's like a big brawling warrior class, which I need. So I was like, you'll give me the key, or I'll kill you and take it. So Alistair, the past Templar and King's Warrior, was like, whoa, we ain't doing that. Morrigan, who's this witch who lives in the wilds, was like, I like this. So then I was like, fuck, I just like threatened a priestess to murder her if she didn't give me a key. And then she's like, here, take the key, get out, never come back. And I went into another town, they're like, we heard that you'd been threatening priests. I was like, oh, god damn it.
We don't care for that sort of behavior around these parts.
I was like, I made one mistake, let me live my peaceful life. But
speaking of, like, these, all, like, all these moral choices that you have to make, we roll it back to the one, the first one that you made, the big one that you made with Jowen.
Yeah, where you chose to betray him.
And you presented this choice to me. I had just recently finished Infamous Second Son, which is also a game that is built on making moral choices. And you may, in Infamous, you make maybe about 5 or 6, like, big moral choices throughout the game. And I already talked about how they're, like, really, like, black and white.
Yeah.
This one early decision that you have to make in Dragon Age, the whole morality of it completely shits over anything that you find in Infamous.
Yeah.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Like,
and
that was just in the origin of the game as well. That's basically the tutorial of the game for mages. And they've thrown a decision that heavy at you.
Yeah, there's, like, there's arguably, like, no good outcome for that choice that you had to make. It was, like, 100% grey area.
Yeah, it's like, whereas, do you do this evil or this evil.
And like, whereas there are like so many other games that are so clearly defined, you know, good and evil.
Like, I knew that in the end the same thing would happen, which is you end up leaving the tower with Duncan, who's the head of the Grey Wardens, because you have to do that. Like, that's how you get into the main story of the game. But it's like, if I hadn't played the game before, it'd probably be easier because I wouldn't realize that every choice lasts throughout most of the game. But it's since I'd played it and finished it and knew that was going to happen, I was like, oh, you gotta be shitting me. Because, like, I betrayed him. I've made it more complicated for myself because I betrayed him in the first place. Then I told him the truth about it. But...
yeah, you got, like, regret.
Yeah.
Video game.
I've never had that before, but, like... so, is he going to take the fact I betrayed him, or is he going to take also the fact that I admitted it to him, and he knew that I didn't, like, really want to, but he left me with no choice, or is he just going to be full of rage, or... I don't know, but that game's it's really cheap just now, and I think there's, like, a full edition that comes with all the DLC as well, and there's a lot of that, but it's...
It's a regular in the Steam sale.
Yeah, it's easily probably one of the longest games you could play, but, like, there's achievements for the game, and as there is with everything, and there's two achievements called The Ultimate Sacrifice and A Dark Promise, and it's basically choose the good or bad ending of the game. And not gonna lie, making that decision at the end was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do in a game. Like, I won't spoil it, but, like, it's you come to that moment where you're like, I have to make a choice, and you've forgotten about it that much that they drop it on you again, and they're like, now you have to pick, and you're like, I can't. You could make a choice that you think seemingly harmless, but, like, for all I know, I could get to a town later on where there's a really important character, and Jaren might come in and kill him, and then that completely changes my path throughout the entire game. And that was set from the very beginning, and I had no idea. So, like, I have no idea what's going to happen, because obviously now I'm at this part of the game where all the gameplay is... in quotes, the same. You know, like, I've passed the origin story, which is unique for every character type, and I'm now into the main game, where the basic storyline is, you've got to get here, build an army, go here, kill thing. But now I have no idea what's going to happen between where I am now and how I'm going to get to the end of the game. Which is actually really exciting and terrifying at the same time. But you two should both look into getting it and playing it, because I'd love to, like, almost play the game along with yous.
I have it already. I've played it for maybe about an hour before I really got into anything grabbing, but I really want to go back and play it now.
Yeah, I'm going to go back.
But, like, when you mentioned the dude in the cage, I think that's roughly around about where I got. I think it was in a place not long after that where I got stuck in the combat. I hadn't either, like, leveled up or I chose my skills wrong or something, but I just couldn't get past this one bit and I just gave up.
Yeah, I think I started playing as a dwarven commoner. I don't remember much about what happened, but I don't know if I want to go back and do something a bit different now.
If I were you, I would definitely either try the mage one or try the, I think it's the human noble? I can't remember. But, like, the game itself, like, the combat system is really well done. You get, like, the X, Y, and B buttons are all mapped to a certain spell or ability, or you can hold down right trigger and get another set of three, but then you can have like 30 abilities. You just hold down left bumper and it stops all gameplay, but still allows you to look around, and you can like set tactics for people and stuff. So like for
the combat is very similar to Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, if anyone ever played that.
Yeah, it's very suited for RPG stuff, but like you level up like every other game, and what I tend to do is I'll specifically level the character I created, but when it comes to the NPC characters, I'll auto-level them so the game does it itself. So it'll choose its own specializations, choose its own abilities and stuff, because I'll never play as them. I just have them in my team, so I just let the computer do its thing. But in camp, which is like a place you get eventually, characters can teach you certain things that you can't learn any other way, and only they know it. So if you're a warrior, you can speak to Alistair and learn certain like Templar abilities. But as a mage, I can learn certain things off Morrigan. So the first thing I did was, ooh, let's learn shapeshifting. So, she's like, okay, I'll teach you how to do an animal form. And I unlocked it, and I went into battle and used it. Never guess what she made me she taught me how to transform into.
A bunny.
A fucking giant spider. And this is like HD in your face, you are the spider. I was like...
Never show Martin this game.
No.
I actually had an idea that I was going to like use me and Morrigan at the same time, get us both to turn into giant spiders, and then like pull the camera down so it's just the two of us, and then send a picture to Martin and be like, hey Martin, play Dragon Age. But another part, Martin will obviously listen to this and hear it. When you play as the mage in the Origin, you get an optional quest where you have to go and clear out a storeroom, which turns out to be a giant cave filled with spiders. That is my least favorite mission in any game ever, because they fall off the damn ceiling at you. And other than that, I'll probably talk about it more in other podcasts the further on I go, but I've not really done much else in it, so I can't say much for it anymore. But it's a very good game, and it's definitely standing up for the amount of time it's been out. I first played it in December 2010, so you get the idea of how long ago that was. But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Is that not the 12th month of the year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay, I know what the 12th month is.
One with Bonfire Night, right?
Yeah.
It's March.
Shout out to the Simpsons.
So, moving away from Dale, Stu, you and I did something interesting related to games earlier this week.
I thought we weren't telling anyone about that.
Oh, no, not the kinky bedroom stuff. I meant the film house thing.
Oh, those kind of games.
Yeah.
Okay, alright, yeah.
So, on Monday night, we met up in person for the first time.
Yep.
It was a pleasant meeting.
It was. We shook hands. It was nice.
Yep. We were very soft.
Oh, thank you.
We went to the Edinburgh Film House to see a presentation called Modern Playing.
Yep.
And it was these two gentlemen who... I can't remember if it was both of them, but one of them was the founder of Game City, which is a...
I think they both are.
Is it both of them? Right.
I think so.
They founded Game City, which is a gaming festival in Nottingham.
Yep.
And they had recently gotten back from a trip to Japan, where they conducted various meetings and all various things, mostly to do with games. And what would you say was the highlight of that talk?
I think seeing the arcade in Tokyo, because obviously arcades are barely around anymore, and then to see one in Tokyo that just looked amazing.
Yeah, they went to, gonna butcher the pronunciation here, but it's not Akihabara, isn't it? That's how it's spelled, but it's not how it's pronounced. Akiba, yeah. That's what it was.
Akiba, I'll do.
Yeah, and they took some very discreet videos from there, because technically they're supposed to. And
they're also slightly distracted trying to catch. Basically, we had a third person there. What was his name again? Remember?
Was it Joseph?
Joseph, that's it. And he has a very unique accessory.
Yes. He was
this sounds amazing.
He was carrying around a white fox, a white fox skin.
Yes.
A scarf, technically.
Yeah. But he didn't want it to be photographed or videoed. So every time they're taking a discreet video in the arcade, you just see the guy who's holding the phone slyly turn the phone around to try and get a video of the fox.
Going back to the arcade itself, one thing we learned, rhythm gaming still very alive and well in Japan.
Oh, that,
oh yeah.
I don't know, can't remember what it was called, but it looked amazing.
My,
that's it.
So, it was this... The first video they showed was of this guy standing in what I think we could only describe as what looked like a washing machine.
Yeah.
The game, by which I mean the game screen was circular and had, buttons all around the edge. And this guy was essentially playing it like a drum.
Nice.
But yeah. He also had to perform, swiping actions and... do certain things in like double time, and it looked really good fun. And this guy was like some kind of like savant at it. And there was this other guy who was playing some kind of like bongo game. Like you want to say like a bit like Donkey Konga, but
he actually had like drumsticks though.
Yeah,
so it was like
yeah. Nice.
And this guy who was playing it was just like a businessman in a suit, and he'd like just gotten back from work and popped into the arcade to play this game.
Yeah,
and also. God, the rows and rows of Street Fighter cabinets. I mean, I know you're not a huge fan of Street Fighter 2, but me, yeah. That was just like, so heaven is on Earth, and it's in Japan.
Yep.
So, like, the thing that when they were showing us these videos, what they were talking about is like, games are so popular in Japan that they're like ingrained so much more into the culture. And yet, they sort of take it for granted, really. Mm. They also talked about how indie gaming in Japan is nowhere near as popular. Yeah. They're only just starting to, like, really take it to more interesting places.
Well, what they were saying was that indie games in Japan are fairly like, grassroots movement. It's very political. Like, they're making political statements through indie games.
Yeah. But just, like, what they know in that country is just like the arcade lifestyle, really.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Also, all that Monster Hunter.
Oh, yeah. Monster Hunter is massive over there. It's kind of a shame Sam's not here. He'd be having a little happy jig about Monster Hunter himself.
They also took a trip to the offices of a little company called Nintendo.
Who?
And Never heard of them.
They had some... interesting revelations about what that place looks like on the inside, or even the outside.
Is it a giant ball pit filled with Patrick Stewart?
It's the complete opposite.
It's the dullest, grayest
building you have ever seen in your entire life. The only way you know that it's the Nintendo building is like the little sign that says Nintendo on the very top floor.
Wow, and that is so disappointing.
And when you go into the foyer and just walk around the offices, you would think there would be like majestic art of Mario and Zelda and Pokemon everywhere. Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Oh.
Jesus.
Apparently there's a picture of a bird. Not a bird related to Nintendo, just a random bird.
Yep. Shout out to that one bird for being more important than the entire Mario, Zelda, and Pokemon franchise.
But they did take away this art book, like hardback art book, I think was for employees that had been with the company for a certain amount of time, Stu. I can't remember
if it was that or was this supposed to be for like visitors, and they were like, oh, we've only got one left, and there was four of them arguing who's going to get it.
Yeah.
and then
one of the people who was speaking, Jimmy, apparently stole it and ran.
Yep. Nice.
And he's still running to this day. He ran all. Yes. He ran all the way to the film house.
He met Maurice, running and Maurice told him how to not slow down. Yeah, I'm still on that.
But even outside of like gaming stuff, they just had like a couple of interesting stories about just Japan itself, like. Yeah. The staircase at Kyoto Station, which is like,
oh my god, that staircase is amazing.
Stuart's amazing reaction.
Dale, if you saw this fucking staircase, you would understand.
Like,
I've never heard two people get so legitimately excited about
it's
a fucking staircase.
Awesome.
Oh my god, that's amazing. Right, Jack, keep talking. I'll get a video for her, Dale.
Right, so everyone listening, go to YouTube and look up Kyoto Station staircase. It's one of the most beautiful displays you have ever seen.
Does it have anything on when we went down to London and there was that creepy old guy sat on the chair in the train station? Wait, did you see the creepy old guy? Did I point him out to you?
I don't remember that.
You know, like when we were first going into the station and in London, like when we first got there, we were looking for which way to go to get out. Like, because we got a bit lost when we first got there. You know how we went to get food when we first arrived?
Yeah.
Well, outside the place we were eating, sat on a bench was this old guy, and he was bald, and he wore a trench coat, And all he was doing was staring directly through the door at this, like, group of people. And every so often his head, like, his chin would slowly get closer to his chest and his head would go down, but he wouldn't break eye contact. And it honestly looked like at any moment he was going to turn into Superman and just fly forward at them.
Like, no, suffice to say, the staircase is better than this.
Aw, oh, man.
I found the Christmas...
Oh, yeah.
...one.
Okay, so what Dale should be looking at right now is a staircase that looks like it's made up entirely of LEDs. It's just running animation.
It gets... This is a whole entire 12-minute presentation.
Wow.
You can skip ahead to the Christmas tree if you want.
Never have I ever been told that I can skip ahead to the Christmas tree.
Like, literally skip.
La 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 la.
I'm watching the falling snowballs. This is amazing.
I feel sorry for anyone listening to this right now.
Alright, so moving away from the awesome staircase. They also
to Japan for having the coolest stairs in the universe.
They also went to this a German themed bar. And
it's like German, Austrian, something like that.
Yeah. And just while they were drinking, out of nowhere, like five girls dressed up in stereotypical female German dress showed up,
yep,
and started singing and playing instruments, just completely mm-hmm. unprompted.
Hey, how it's beautiful. Are you? No, that wasn't a song they were singing.
That bar looked amazing.
Yeah. Oh, I suppose the last thing we should mention about it, they also went to see, they also met up with, oh god, what was his name?
Akira Toriyama.
No, the guy who... Do you remember his name, Sue, who wrote the music for Parappa the Rapper?
I can't remember his name, I'm afraid.
I think his last name was Messiah?
Messiah?
Something like that, hang on.
I'm just looking it up, don't worry.
Yeah, I'm looking up Parappa the Rapper and going from there.
Did you mean Messiah Matsura?
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah.
God, you two and your lack of knowledge.
Shut up.
So, this guy is quite legendary in the writing business for video games, I believe. And one of the guys doing the presentation was... Tattoo?
I just whispering kick punch.
Darling of mine.
Say it loud and proud. One of the guys doing the presentation was a synthesizer enthusiast.
Those people do exist.
That sounds like it should be on your CV. I have a PhD in electronics, and also I'm a synthesizer enthusiast.
He is a professor. So he might actually have a PhD in synthesizers, you don't know.
I have a PhD in synthesizing.
So this Messiah took these guys back to his studio. I think towards like the end of their meeting, like after they'd like played about with all the equipment and stuff.
Can I cut in, Jack? You called him Messiah, as in like the Messiah.
I know it's Easter, but come on.
I just think the way you casually were like, Messiah. I think it'd be more pronounced Messiah.
Messiah, alright. Sorry.
We're going into that weird religious place again. So Japan has the Messiah. And he composes for Parappa the Rapper.
He's hiding there all along, writing music for Parappa the Rapper. Alright,
Messiah. You heard it here first.
So,
yes, tell us about Messiah.
Completely lost my train of thought now.
So he let them like play with his equipment, and they weren't like allowed to take.
Well, they did take pictures of them, but they had to, shall we say, obscure a lot of the stuff.
Yes.
In the picture, so basically, they like colored in everything that they weren't allowed to show to the point where it was just some guy sitting down with his arms outstretched.
Yes.
Surrounded by blue.
I like they use the terms play with his equipment and obscure it.
Whatever.
Grow up, Dale.
Never.
But what I wanted to get to was that at the very end of their meeting, he like pulled them aside, took out this record, said, "Record is my greatest inspiration and is quite possibly the most perfect piece of audio that has ever been recorded.
Is it Backstreet's Back? All right.
No, it's not.
No.
God apparently, damn it.
Apparently there's like one spot in the studio that's like perfect, like has the perfect acoustics to listen to this one piece of recording. It's not the greatest song in the world. It's the greatest recording.
I think it's just a tribute. I was like, don't do that to me, Stuart.
I think someone else made that joke.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. So what was this song?
Well, here's the thing.
He wasn't allowed to tell us.
Yeah, he wasn't allowed to tell us.
So that guy knows, but can't tell anyone.
They signed an NDA saying that they weren't allowed to reveal the song that he played for them.
Wow. But then one of them was like, oh, this is ridiculous. I'll get him on FaceTime and we'll see if we can tell you. And then show some sort of like, just to end the whole show, they ended with like a clip show of
some
like,
lovely Japanese scenery.
Yeah. And then right at the end, the other guy came in and was like, no, we definitely cannot play the song. And at that moment, the song played and it was a beautiful comedic moment.
which went completely over my head.
Because Jack like, came out and was like, oh, that was an anticlimactic ending. He's like, didn't you get it? That was the song.
So
it was Easy Lover.
Oh. Yeah, it was Easy Lover by Phil Collins.
I was expecting Nice Shoe to be like, I don't know what song it was, but it was a song and they played it.
It was 10 minutes of uninterrupted yelling.
Otherwise known as Yoko Ono.
It was all of our Michael Jackson impressions, including Jack's amazing. Was that you, Jack?
Yes.
Yeah. I know what it was, Jack. It was your version of Wake Me Up Before You Go Go, which is
promise never to speak
YouTube.
Of that again.
Oh, is it?
Yep. If you go to my channel and look at me and Jack playing
my a cappella rendition of Wake Me Up Before You Go Go.
Yep. If you look for a video called The Big Fight, which is a Mortal Kombat one, skip to near the end, and there's a lot of pictures of Jack and Jack singing.
Also nice. Includes a solid Baraka impression.
Yeah.
Well, I know what my nighttime viewing is going to be.
Every night.
And then you're going to watch that video, right?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, I think it's time we take our next break.
Woo!
Yes.
When we come back, movie talk and more news. 4 bits of the same news said very differently.
News.
This just in, Jack's mum's a really big fan of Stuart's puns on Facebook.
This is live breaking news. So, one of the best things about Stuart, and one of the reasons we love him so much, is that he insists on filling our Facebook feeds with a variety of puns and joke statuses.
I'll just read one out that I've got here. My first day as a police commissioner has gone poorly. I asked my force to deliver me some justice, and they came back 10 minutes later with a bucket of just ice.
I love that.
Why so, am I laughing? It's my joke.
You're so vain. I bet you think this blood flows right through you, don't you?
No one liked that one.
So anyway, he posted one today that reads as follows. Happy Easter from Easter to all you Westers, Southers, and Northers who don't have their own holiday. That is what Easter is about, right? Celebrating those on the East Coast. And I thought, oh, this is another good one. I'm going to like this. And one of my friends on Facebook happens to be my dear mother. And
she's listening to the podcast. Hello.
As you may know, when you like a status on Facebook, it will occasionally show up in the feed of your friends. And it must have shown up in my mum's feed because 1 hour ago, she shared it.
My favorite thing about this is when it must have shown up on her feed, she'd have to see Stuart's picture, which is him, completely bald, looking mad as hell. Also, Stuart, I just noticed that your fucking cover picture is congratulations.
That's so proud, proudest achievement of making that my cover photo.
I think aside from that, Stuart's from Kingston in Jamaica, we can agree that his Facebook is the greatest thing in the world.
Stuart has one of the greatest Facebook profiles ever. He needs more followers.
If you go to like the pictures of him, the 9 thumbnails, the middle one. Middle one. His fucking bone saw. So, shout out to Stuart and Jack's mum.
Yep. Like the bone saw one is tagged with me, Martin, and you, Dale.
Yep.
We were ready.
My favourite part is that we're all people in the crowd.
Yep.
Okay.
Screaming woman.
And in the photo?
So, I'm not gonna lie, his Facebook like posts are some of the things that are like the main reason I even log onto Facebook anymore.
Yep.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
So, back to the podcast.
What? No, keep praising me. I like it. This is now the Stu cast.
Yeah. To change the name to the Stuart's Facebook cast.
Bring in the dubstep.
Comedy.
So, Dale. You saw the Amazing Spider-Man 2.
And if Sam was here, he'd correct you to say Amazing Spider-Man 2. But yes, I did. I saw it on the 18th when it came out. There's been a lot of, like, I don't know, kind of disgruntled, very long-time comic book fans who don't quite like it, because it doesn't...
See, also every comic book movie.
Yeah, like... Obviously, they're never going to fucking please everyone, so I've given up, like, caring what hardcore comic book fans think of the films. I just go to see it for if I like it or not. And I know we've had this conversation before about, like, who's a better Spider-Man, Tobey Maguire or Andrew Garfield. In this one, I fucking love Andrew Garfield. He's, like... I'm not going to hype it up because I know people are going to go and watch it, but one thing I'll say is they've stopped treating it like it's aimed at kids now. There's a lot of, like, dark stuff in that film from the off, and, like, I don't know, I just like the direction these ones are going. But, have any of you seen the film Chronicle?
No, like, I keep meaning to, like, rent it or something, but yeah, I really want to see it.
Like, the guy who plays the main character in that plays Harry Osborn in Spider-Man, and as everyone knows from watching the old Spider-Man films and... all that, Harry Osborn eventually becomes the Hobgoblin, I think. Or the Green Goblin, I can't remember.
No,
he becomes
Green Goblin 2.
Green Goblin 2, that's it. In this film, they skip one goblin and just go straight to him. Which, you know, I didn't care about. I was like, yay. But the guy who plays him is so damn good at acting like a good guy who turns evil. I now can't even remember what James Franco was like as Harry Osborn.
Not very good, that's all you need to know. Like, yeah, he was the worst part of Spider-Man 3, which is the film I will defend.
Yeah.
James Franco sucked in that film. I like James Franco.
He was also pretty whiny in Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
He was like, okay in Spider-Man 1 because he was just Harry Osborn.
Yeah, because he was Peter's friend.
Yeah.
But in this one, like the guy who plays him, who's called Dane DeHaan, he is fucking amazing. Other characters that are, like, in the...
I think, like, the... If you don't mind me interjecting here, Dale.
No, go ahead.
While you're talking about the villains, I think that's the source of the disgruntlement that you're talking about, is that the villains look kind of goofy in this film. Every time I see
Electro?
That poster of Spider-Man staring down Electro, he just looks so goddamn tacky. Like, every time I see, like, a promotional still of Electro, he's just... Ugh.
The poster does Jamie Foxx no credit. Like, when you get to the actual film, like, when he is, like, because he starts off as a regular, normal guy, who obviously is played by Jamie Foxx, and when he has the whole transition into Electro, I actually like the Electro version of him more, because, like, I don't know, he just looks really cool. And they don't do, like, you know how when in every comic book film. When someone becomes who you know to be the villain, they're just straight away bad. They don't do that with Electro. He starts off being, like, scared and wanting help. And I thought, like, that in itself as a change made the film 100 times better than just them being like, he's Electro now, make him the villain. So, like,
so do you in general prefer tragic villains to just all out dicks?
Not always. It's very situational. Like, in the what's a good film to, like, I'm trying to think of another superhero film that just had a straight out villain. Rather than, because I'm trying not to go back to the original three Spider-Man films.
Dark Knight?
Yeah, like with the
Red Skull from Captain America?
Like, well, I was going to say, like, with the Joker, how he's straight off played off as the villain. They did that well. But then you get things like in fucking, I don't know, like, things like, I didn't really like the first Captain America film. I don't know why, I just couldn't get into it.
Why does no one like that film? It was awesome.
I liked it.
I did like it.
I've still not seen the second one, but I liked it.
In the list of superhero films I've seen, it's near to the bottom of the good portion. As a film itself, it's good. But, like, if you go to things like Iron Man, you know, in the first one, how, like, the guy whose name I forget, the Russian guy with Whiplash, he started off...
That was Iron Man 2.
Oh, yeah, shit, that's what I meant. I knew what I meant. So, yeah, Whiplash, like, I didn't like him as a villain because he was just played off as villain from the start. Kind of. Like, they hinted straight away that he was just going to be bad the whole time. And I didn't like that, which kind of, like, soiled Iron Man for me. But in this film, where, like, Jamie Foxx starts off as a regular guy and then becomes, quote-unquote, the villain who doesn't want to be bad, only for him to be left with almost no other choice. And then, on the polar opposite of that, Harry Osborn starts off as a good guy and slowly, like, transcends to being evil. And then, obviously, there's just generic bad guy goon who is bad guy throughout the whole film. But another thing about, like, as we all know with the Spider-Man films, they're very good at interjecting comedy at the right time. Especially with, like, The Amazing Spider-Man. This film is the first film I've seen that had an entire, like, cinema full of people giggling like idiots for about 3 minutes straight at some of the stupid jokes in it. And, then
I would argue that Spider-Man 3 interjected comedy at all the wrong times.
Yeah, well, I'm not even caring.
Or all the right times, how dare you, Jack, fuck you.
Stuart, a vehement defender of Spider-Man 3, except when James Franco's involved.
Are there any dance sequences in Amazing Spider-Man 2?
Not gonna lie, I think someone may dance once.
Oh, yes, best
but
show ever!
It's not a dance scene.
Fuck you!
But, yeah, all the characters in the casting is great. You all know who the Black Cat is, right?
Yes.
Vaguely.
I may be wrong, but there's a character in the film called Felicia.
Yep.
Yep.
And I'm pretty sure that she's going to be Black Cat in later film. I don't know if it'll be the third one.
Yep.
So they introduced her. Like, if you've read any of the comics or know any of the comics, you'll catch certain characters during the film who you know who they are. Like, there's this guy who, don't even spoil it, his name's Uncle Ben? May have heard of him. Turns out, he's dead.
He makes the rice, right?
Yeah.
Oh, damn it, you beat me to it.
But, they cover a lot of, like, unanswered stuff in this one as well. Like, the whole Peter's parents come back into the equation. Like, his real parents, not his Aunt May and Uncle Ben. Surprisingly, this one, no blowing up of his aunt's house by Willem Dafoe.
Oh, what?
Anyone who was wanting Willem Dafoe to come back
into the
film.
I thought that was a contractual obligation.
Just like at some random point, Willem Dafoe as himself busts into the film and blows up the house. He's like, yeah, I'm not done with this.
I have unfinished business.
But, graphically, the film looks amazing. I actually got a little motion sick within the first, like, 2 minutes of the film because there's a top-down, well, like, there's a view following Spider-Man as he's swinging through the city, and there's a bit where it looks down on top of him as he's falling. Like, it was, because I watched it in 3D, which was probably the mistake I made. Watching that in 3D gave me motion sickness, but as soon as that scene was over, I was back into the film and it was amazing. So if you're going to see it in 3D, you won't be disappointed. They do all the 3D at the right time, and they don't try and, like, make tacky use of throw something at the screen to make it look like it's coming at you.
I don't know if you'll be able to answer this question without maybe spoiling something, but what's the Rhino's presence like in the film? Because I haven't seen much of what he does.
The rhino only shows up at the end. It's like, you know how they do that thing in every film where they end it on a note that makes you want to see the next film? The rhino is part of the you're going to want to see the next film.
But so he's the like ultimate edition of rhino. So he's basically a little nerdy guy in a big robot suit, right?
Yeah, during
he's
the
played
film,
by Paul Giamatti.
Yeah, during
he's
the
one of
film,
my favorite
you'll
actors
see him,
of all time.
Like, Spider-Man and him have a meeting halfway through the film, and he gets arrested. And it's later on that they then put him into the ultimate rhino. And basically it's just like him in a giant-ass suit with guns. And that's like all his whole thing in the film is literally 5 minutes. But I won't spoil it, but when you see the rhino suit, you'll see why they left it to the end. And surprisingly, no cameo by Nick Fury.
Oh,
well, I'm pretty sure Jamie Foxx was enough for them.
Well, the problem is, though, like with Spider-Man, it's owned by a different studio who does the Marvel film, so it's
Sony,
completely separate.
They own X-Men as well, don't they?
No, it's 20th Century Fox that owns X-Men.
Oh, well. Fuck you, then. But, yeah.
We like, just got faced!
There was one other thing I wanted to bring up. The, like, to do with the cast and stuff, they've kept all the same people who were in the first one, obviously. There was no, like...
replacement.
Yes. And also, still no Mary Jane Watson, as far as I can tell. They've done a good job of, like, kind of keeping her at bay.
Well, like... they've got the other one, so it's fine.
Yeah, Gwen.
The other one,
Gwen Stacy. She like to do with the actual comics. She was Spider-Man's love interest. Like she was.
Yeah.
She was
Mary Jane Watson came after.
Yes.
Gwen Stacy.
Also, okay, this isn't going to spoil anything. So I'm going. There's a scene when they're in a clock tower. When you're watching that scene, do not blink, because some things happen in that scene that last for a split second, and if you blink like my friend did, you miss it. So, when they're in the clock tower, try and just keep your damn eyes open. Because I saw it, but he didn't, and he's gutted. By it, I mean, like, I think he blinked, like, twice and missed one thing. But, there's a lot of very good slow motion in that film as well. So, all in all, like, one of my friends on Facebook was complaining that he didn't like it. He's like, as a comic fan of, like, 10-plus years, it wasn't that great. I was like, no. For that, your opinion is actually invalid.
Solid rebuttal?
Yes. Like, I really, really enjoyed the film. I thought, like, the effects were great, the casting's great, the scripting was good.
I do want to see a good Spider-Man movie again, but I just was so thrown off by, like, how
the first one was marketed and how Spider-Man looked. And
yeah.
I don't know.
Do I need to have seen the first one to enjoy the second one?
Not entirely. There's a lot of, like... well, not a lot. There's a few times where something from the first film's brought up, but they actually tell you why that shows up, so you don't have to see it, you just have to sort of, like, take what they say as, like, gospel, if you haven't seen it. So if they were to say, he told me to wear red shoes, which isn't a part of it, but, like, you'd have to assume in the first film someone
watch
said
that. For the moment in The Amazing Spider-Man 2, where Spider-Man goes to Oz.
Spider-Man starts wearing Air Jordans. But yeah, the Amazing Spider-Man 2.
And he clicks the heels three times and he's able to make the game-winning basket with the Toon Squad.
He clicks his heels three times and James Franco's not in the film. But
dude, 2016, The Amazing Spider-Man 3, Space Jam.
Yep. Michael Jordan plays Carnage. Actually, I want to see Carnage in a film much more than I ever want to see Venom in a Spider-Man film.
I think if they're ever going to have Carnage in a film, it's going to be a Venom film rather than a Spider-Man.
You can't introduce Carnage without introducing Venom first. That's kind of the
rule.
Not
to mention that film will probably be like an 18.
Yes,
just Carnage does not take anything lightly. So me and my friends were saying, can you imagine a film with Carnage and Deadpool? Because they both talk to themselves. So like, Deadpool would just have constant speech bubbles and Carnage would be referring to himself in the first person.
What about Deadpool with the Carnage
the third
symbiote?
You could go into that film and you would just bleed from every orifice and leave again. But,
no professional reviews, all the critics died.
Hold on, let me just do a quick count in my head. There was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, potentially 6.
Are you singing Lou Bega? That's my thing.
No, there is potentially 7 villains in Spider-Man 2.
Oh,
but
no.
Only 2
That's
of them
much.
Are physically shown and are
okay,
any part of the
okay.
film. Like,
two's okay.
Rhino comes in at the end and is, he's not even part of the actual film. And there's another few in the background who aren't villains. It's just, you know it to be them. And Norman Osborn's in the film. So I don't know if they're going to do something with that, but he was in the film. Also,
was Osborn in the first film? I can't remember.
He's talked about in the first film. This, you know,
this is obviously in Oscorp. I remember they were in Oscorp. I don't remember if he was physically in the first film.
You know when they finally arrest the lizard? And yeah, it goes to that scene of him in prison. And then that weird dude comes out of the shadows. He mentions Norman Osborn saying he's dying. And they wanted Connors to help save him. And then Connors doesn't play a part in the second film. He's mentioned, but that's it. But Norman Osborn is actually a physical part of the film in the second one. He's a... One thing I'll say about that film, the makeup in it is amazing, because that dude is horrible. But, yeah, the best part, like, my favorite part of the film is when, like, you all know Electro's ability to, like, disassemble himself into electricity, right?
Yeah.
I did not.
Well, basically, he can like, move himself through electricity. He can, like, disassemble himself completely and move into electricity and then come out. He doesn't in the film, but the CG on it is incredible. And, yeah, Stuart, you're gonna love the film.
I'm supposed to be seeing it tomorrow. I did, for all, how much of a fanboy I am of the original trilogy, I did enjoy Amazing Spider-Man 1.
Yeah. One thing I hate, like, because you're one of these people who I really like, Stuart, in the fact that you'll go and see the new version with an open mind, and you won't, like, you won't compare it to the first. So many people I know are like, oh, I'm not going to watch it because I like the Tobey Maguire one. I was like, be fucking thank, you've got a fourth Spider-Man film to watch now. Doesn't matter if it's a different Spider. Like, do you think people were angry when fucking Eric Bana and fucking Edward Norton and that new guy were playing the Hulk instead of Lou Ferrigno? Some people were probably legitimately mad about that, but
his name is Mark Ruffalo, and he is a goddamn saint.
He is an attractive
Mark Ruffalo
man.
Is a brilliant Hulk.
Yes, he is.
Like, him and Robert Downey Jr. have perfect chemistry. That's not what I'm talking. That's off topic.
No, are you trying to say perfect casting or perfect chemistry?
Like, chemistry, like,
they
work well
very
together.
Well together. But, like, that's another thing I like about Marvel, is they're getting a lot better with casting now.
Oh, they're so good at casting right now.
Like, I would love to see a singular Hulk film with Mark Ruffalo.
I think it's coming.
I fucking hope so. I would love
but
that.
But I also think he works really well as a supporting character, so it's kind of...
Can we all agree, like, that one of the best parts in The Avengers was when Tony Stark electrocuted Bruce Banner and just stared at him waiting for a reaction? When they're in the lab, just casually having a conversation, he zaps. Like, I'm not gonna do it. That's when I knew they'd got, like, the two right actors for that. I was like, I can't think of anyone else who could have pulled that off better than Robert Downey Jr. and Mark Ruffalo.
The other thing that's worrying is when they eventually need to replace these people, when they inevitably reboot it in, like, a decade. Like, yeah, they're not going to be able to do it.
No.
Because they've already
they may
got,
just
like,
leave it after this.
I doubt it. Well, too much money.
I mean, they've got things like Guardians of the Galaxy in that coming, and a lot of that CG
Batista!
Now. Yeah, I'm more impressed with fucking the fact that Batista, Vin Diesel, and someone else is in it. I can't remember who does the voice of Rocket Raccoon.
Bradley Cooper.
That's the one. That's like a whole host of, like, fucking good actors. Well, Bradley Cooper's, like, not quite on the level of Batista. Have you seen...
No. Batista is, like, a multi-time Oscar winner.
Have you seen
And
Riddick,
Bradley Cooper is just some nobody. I have not seen Riddick actually.
If you like Batista, don't watch that film.
Aw.
Dude gets murdered.
Also, don't forget, the guy who plays Star-Lord is the same guy who voiced Emmett in the Lego movie.
Yes.
Nice.
That's another Marvel film I'm really looking forward to. But,
the Lego movie?
Yes.
Blu-ray for the Lego movie comes out in June, July.
Yes. Can you do me a favor, Stuart, when you go and see Spider-Man?
What?
About 2 minutes into the credits, they do that typical Marvel thing where they have another Marvel character show up. Ta-da.
All right, yeah.
Can you stay after all the credits? Because I think I may have missed one. Because after that, me and my friends left, assuming that was the end. There might have been something else, and I don't know.
You're not the boss of Stu. He will leave whenever he goddamn wants.
No, Stuart is my bitch. He will stay.
I am my own bitch, thank you very much.
No, he can unfriend you on Facebook, and you'll never see his glorious puns and jokes again.
Oh, yeah, well, I'll unfriend you on Facebook, and then I'll friend your mum, and then she'll share all Stuart's fucking Facebook statuses, and I'll see them anyway.
I'll stay till the end, it's fine.
Thanks, buddy.
Alright, we've got one more thing that we need to talk about. That's one solitary bit of news, but important to Gale and myself.
Yes, Bungie O'Martin was Donald out of fire. Okay, so, if you're listening
so we
to the
may
podcast,
have rearranged that headline slightly.
Pause the podcast, replay that last bit back, listen back to what I said, and see if you can figure out what we were on about.
There's a prize for the winner.
Yes, if you guessed I said Martin O'Donnell fired out of a bungee, you're correct.
And you win, Jack.
Yep. House bitch for a month.
So, Martin O'Donnell, the famous composer behind the Halo, has not just left Bungie,
he was
fired.
But according to Bungie, they parted, what was it, they said they parted as friends.
I'd like me to read the...
Yeah, I believe like that was the term that Bungie used, was parted as friends, but you'll have to read out the actual thing.
Right, so... Is Martin O'Donnell's original tweet was, "I'm saddened to say that Bungie's board of directors terminated me without cause on April 11th.
Ouch.
Followed up, this is from...
Terminated sounds dramatic.
Yeah. This story...
Like, they killed him and he still was able to tweet.
They sent Arnold Schwarzenegger back in time to kill him.
Okay, so this is from Engadget, just in case you're curious. After composing some of the most memorable songs in gaming for Bungie games, including most of the Halo series, Martin O'Donnell tweeted tonight that he has been terminated without cause by Bungie's board of directors. There's still no word on why the separation happened, although if he's still interested in working on Halo, one would think it's time for 343 Industries to make a phone call. A statement on Bungie.net confirms the move, although it claims, "Today, as friends, we say goodbye." Timing and feeling reported by the two sides appear to be at odds, and while we wait for more details, we'll remember better days with Marty's recent work on the Destiny trailer, his compositions for which will remain in the game.
Not gonna lie, fucking the music in Halo is some of my favorite music of all time, and knowing that he's now no longer connected to it makes me kind of sad.
Well, he's not connected to Bungie. Bungie don't make Halos anymore.
Well, no, like, in the fact that he's not connected to making music for Bungie, so things like Destiny won't have his music.
Yeah. I don't think it's an overstatement to say that the music is some of the best parts of Halo.
Yeah.
Like, yep, I agree.
Zen, do you remember in Halo 3 where you finally make it to, like, the big tower and you have to run across the light bridge? And, like, that...
Yeah.
That, like, that one bit of Halo music where the piano plays and then it builds up as you're running was one of my favorite moments ever in a game.
Audio go, Dale, sorry.
Like I say, like that was one of the things that I always loved about Halo was the music, to the point where I have, like, all the soundtracks downloaded, and I have, like, the guitar version of the Halo theme by Steve Vai and Marty O'Donnell, and I have the fucking London Symphony Orchestra's version of the Halo theme and stuff. Like, I just loved the music in total, and it was all down to him, so in a sense, I love his music. And I don't know, I don't think things like fucking Destiny will be the same without someone who knows the kind of music that he does.
I think whoever's doing the music for the Halo games now, I think Series is in pretty good hands, because the music that plays when you first boot up the game, at the main menu, holy fuck, that's one of my favorite themes
the
I've ever heard.
The woman doing the solo, like, opera bit.
Every time I like booted up the game, I would actually stay on that menu for like 5 minutes before I even played anything. But I can't like find the name for that track anywhere.
You know, if you probably look up the Halo 4 soundtrack, you'd find it. Yeah, it's actually called. But I don't know. I don't know. I wonder where they'll go with, like. Well, I wonder where he'll go now. I wonder if there's any other company. Jinx, he'll go to like fucking Valve, like most. Previous company staff.
Well, the most curious thing here is not where he's going. Why did he have to go in the first place? I mean, what possible reason could they have for firing him?
Yeah.
He's been with the company for so long and his work has been so lauded.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it was just his time at that company. Maybe they were just like, well...
You reckon they had creative differences or something?
Yeah, maybe he was like, I want this kind of music, this'll work. And they were like, nope, we want this. And he's like, well, not making that music. And in the end, they're just like, well, okay, well, bye.
Well, if that's the case, props to him for, like, believing in his craft. But
well, I mean,
still
like,
a shame.
Listen to any of the music he's done. That guy knows what music goes where.
Yep. Almost like it's his job.
I know. Like, you can see why he made it as big as he did, though, is what I mean.
You're speaking about your favorite bit from Halo 3. I never played much of the original Halo trilogy outside of Halo 1.
Yeah.
But he did the music for Halo Reach as well, right?
He did, I believe. Hold on, I'll go and check, because if it wasn't him, I'm going to feel stupid, but I feel like it was him.
Because Halo Reach was the first Halo game that I really got stuck into. That was my first game that I got for my 360. And
Stuart's linked to something. Same.
This is this is a definite...
Sonic fan art. I'll get back... Yes, his most recently released work is the music for Halo Reach.
Right. So... Spoiler if you haven't played Halo Reach, but it's what, 4
nice
years
joke.
Old at this point?
Yes.
The
is it the
scene
Lone Wolf
where...
bit, or...
No, not the Lone Wolf. The scene where Kat dies, where she gets suddenly shot through the head by a sniper. The music that plays after that...
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah. I mean, I even wrote about it on a little blog I did back in the day.
The music that plays while you're getting ready to... Like, you know, after you see Emil get attacked, and it's assumed he's about to die, which obviously he is. But, like, it's just after he's been stabbed, and you know you're running up to find him, and the music starts building louder and louder. Also, Jack's gone quiet again.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, all so quiet.
But, like, yeah, like, the way the music starts, like, banging and building up and stuff.
It's oh so
I swear
still.
To God, Jack.
What the fuck?
The point I was going to make
shout
was...
Shout out to Bjork.
Like, that scene, like, just after Emil's been, like, stabbled, and you can hear him breathing
it's a
through
military
your...
term.
Yes. You hear him breathing into your, like, headset if you're wearing one, and it starts getting shallower and shallower. But the music starts building as if it's saying, like, you have to move. He's going to die if you don't get there fast enough. Listening to that, like, because one of my friends asked me to write a bit about game music for him, and I put that bit in. Because I was like, it's not often a composer knows how to make music, like, almost speak to you and tell you something, rather than just be an added thing for a moment. But, like, Marty O'Donnell was good at making music feel right as well as sound right.
Music is perhaps, I think, the most overrated component in most, like, blockbuster games these days. I mean, outside of things like Halo and The Last of Us as well had a fantastic soundtrack, but so many, like, popular games, like, just, I don't know, Call of Duty and that, I think they really overlook music and are content with just doing, like, generic stuff.
So, like, the last thing I want to say about Mario O'Donnell is, like, I'm definitely going to, like, because do I follow him on Twitter, or do I just occasionally stalk his Twitter? I can't remember. Either way, I'm going to,
like
keep
a good
an
fan.
Eye on what he's doing, because, like, I'd love to see him doing other, like, I'd love to see what kind of music he'd create for games like, maybe not Gears of War, but that is an example, you know, like, a game that, like, the music is still quite a big part of.
So, I'm like, certain he will not be out of a job for very long.
No, now that he's out of Bungie's, like, contractual, like, limits...
Obligations.
I'm pretty sure a handful of companies are already like, we need this man. He knows a thing or two about making damn musics.
Preparing their
best
interviewers.
Oh my god. Viewers.
We
oh my
have
god.
A Martin that makes fuck you, Jack.
He makes interviews.
We have a wow. Martin that makes music. If we can get him to legally change his surname to O'Donnell, we can, like, market him as our own version of that.
Well,
yeah,
O'Donnell
it's
the
sad
second.
That, it's sad that he's been, quote-unquote, terminated.
Oh, right, you're talking about that, Martin.
But I think we can all agree, he'll be back.
He will be. Also,
wish him all the best.
Fucking Jack making me remember the cat death scene. You're just the worst.
Sorry.
Now I have to remember it too, you know. I had to bring it up. How do you think I felt?
I had to play it.
I didn't, so, you know, I'm happy.
Fuck you,
you're dead to me, Stuart.
We're unfriending you on Facebook.
Fair enough, it's your loss.
I'm refriending you on Facebook.
And on that note, you can find the podcast at lootdroppodcast.blogspot.co.uk. I'm filling in for Martin this week.
There we go. It's like Martin was here the whole time.
Hi.
You can find the podcast Twitter at lootdroppodcast. Am I right in saying that Stu has taken over operations for that since it hasn't been updated in about 3 weeks?
My bad.
Yep, I'll take over it now. It's mine. Oh, mine.
Oh, you could post some of your puns on there, perhaps.
No.
Yes. Stuart's very good about where he posts his puns.
You can also find our own individual Twitter accounts at Project J for myself, at Fenros Wolfblade for Dale, and at Super Game Fight for Stu. And with that, we'd like to thank you for listening to this episode of the Loot Drop Podcast.
No, I don't care.
Oh, Jack!
Wow, that was a quick turnaround. You have the floor, Stu. On you go.
It was Dale who said something.
No, I didn't. You showed old Jack.
Thank you.
Oh, Jack.
Oh, Jack.
What will we do with me?
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with a... Oh, also, come back in 2 weeks for another special podcast.
Yeah! We're already preparing for it.
Yes, we're all getting our lists. Also, I think we should add a thing where people can ask us questions to ask on the podcast should they want to. So they can.
Oh, well, that's what the Twitter account is for, Dale.
Yeah, that's what I mean. We should probably tell them that they can do that.
Yeah, so I think we've mentioned before, if you have questions for us or you want us to plug something for you.
Or you want to add your thoughts onto a topic we've spoke about, which we can bring up.
If you want us to plug something for you, learn how fucking plugs work.
Hire an electrician.
And a spacesuit. Plug it in!
You're sick of going round to your house because you've accidentally unplugged your Hoover halfway round. I mean, I'm sorry
it's
that happened against
you,
but
on my computer. Plug it in!
You know, if Martin was here, he'd be doing the have you tried turning it on and back off again, so in light of Martin not being here, I'll make a bad joke for him. And by that, I mean, fuck you, Martin.
Yes, so if you want to do any of that...
Except the fucking Martin.
Drop us a line at Loot Drop Podcast.
Yes.
And we will see you next week for more podcasts.
Yes, we will see you because we'll be recording right behind you.
In your house, in your room,
under your bed. On your neck. That's me.
That's Martin. We sent him on ahead.
Also, come back next week for Stuart's thoughts on Spider-Man 2.
Yes!
Among other things.
Nope.
No.
Just that.
2 hours of Spider-Man 2.
Can we get James Franco on as a special guest? And then just sit there and be like, you know you were the worst part of Spider-Man 3, right?
We'd have to keep him away from 17-year-old girls first, though.
Oh, sick boy. Well, right, can we also get Seth Rogen on? Because I fucking love that guy.
Yeah, sure. Woo! This goodbye has lasted quite a while.
So, next week on the podcast, Seth Rogen, James Franco.
All of a sudden, we're the Late Show.
Yes!
Alright. Goodbye!
Bye, everyone!
Bye!